Parashat Vayishlach. On the front side of your sheet, you have the beginning of the parasha. We will go through some of it, but ultimately the substance of this shiur is going to be on the second side, where we're going to deal with a number of selections from the Rambam, Rabbeinu Moshe ben Nachman, Nachmanides, one of the great Mefarshim of Torah and Shas, Rambam, the great Rambam. Oh, you must have heard from me often. The Rambam arrived in Eretz Yisrael what year? If you're a student of mine, you should know what year he arrived in Eretz Yisrael. He arrived in Eretz Yisrael in 1267. And he came to Yerushalayim. And when the Rambam came to Yerushalayim, he found in this city a grand total of two Jews who were committed by the Sultan to live in the city. Can you imagine? Yerushalayim with two Jews. And I think they belong to the same party. But I'm not sure. There were two Jews in Yerushalayim. You understand, a few hundred years later, I always say with the Ramban, be plunked down in Yerushalayim today, he wouldn't know what hit him. He would jump for joy. Hundreds of thousands, about 500,000 Jews in Yerushalayim. Anyway, the Rambam in Parashat Vayishlach, the beginning of Parashat Vayishlach is exceptional in the insights that he shares with us. Because the parasha is talking about the return of Yaakov Avinu to Eretz Yisrael after an absence of 22 years. 22 years earlier, alone, he fled from before his brother Esau. And a lot of tzoras that he had to live through during the course of those 22 years, together with Laban, but at the same time that there were tzoras, there was also tremendous growth. 11 of his children had been born. He had married Leah and Rachel, Bilhah, Zilpah. He returns to Eretz Yisrael a wealthy man, and Yaakov himself says, "Ki b'makli ofarti esayarden azeh." When I crossed this Jordan on the way to Chutz Laaretz, I crossed with nothing more than a stick in my hand. I am two calves. But as he arrives, as he is making his way toward Eretz Yisrael, he is confronted by another tzar, the tzar of an Esau, who he finds out is coming toward him with 400 men armed to the teeth. The tzaras of Yaakov are not over. By the way, he's going to have tzaras in the parasha in Eretz Yisrael. There's going to be the tzar of Dinah, daughter who is raped and taken captive by Shechem and Hamor. He's going to be surrounded by enemies all over. The Ramban says it, and other Mefarshim say that Yaakov Avinu is the story of the Jew in Golos. Now, I want to explain what that means. When we're talking about the word Golos over here, we are not talking about a geographic location. The Jew, the word Golos can mean the diaspora, any place outside of Eretz Yisrael, or Golos can also represent a period in history, the entire period of history until the coming of Mashiach. That means we, in a historic sense, we are still in a period of Golos, which is a period of Tzara. And Yaakov Avinu is going to have Tzaras right here in Eretz Yisrael. For that matter, according to Chazal, you have to, we're coming to Hanukkah, it's Kislev. Did it ever occur to you that Hanukkah, which was Golos Yavon, the exile of Yavon, took place where? In the diaspora? No, right here in Eretz Yisrael. All of Hanukkah expresses the idea that we were in Golos in Eretz Yisrael, and we emerged from we emerge from it. Yaakov is the story of the Jews' confrontation with all sorts of enemies throughout history. In the house of Laban, there are those who are jealous of him. They're jealous of his wealth. Rachel and Leah tell their husband that they hear from the family of Laban, Ki me'asher lo avinu, from that which belongs to our father. Also, you made all of your wealth. Doesn't that sound a little bit like the story in Chutz Laaretz, the Jews who own the insurance companies and the banks, and for all I know, they brought about the meltdown. I mean, we were always accused of being the one. All of our wealth comes from them. It started with Yitzchak. When Avimelech tells Yitzchak to leave Plishtim, he says, Lech me'imanu, leave us, ki otzamto mimenu mi'od. Your might and your wealth came from us. But then again, of course, he is also confronted by a Lavan who wants to simply destroy the sanctity of Israel utterly. Now he's going to be confronted by an Esav who may want to destroy him physically, exterminate him utterly. And then when he's in Eretz Yisrael, he's going to have problems with the people around. He waged wars in Eretz Yisrael because of the people around. I mean, the story of Yaakov, when the Ramban will say that it's the story of the Jew in Golus, it means the Jew throughout history is represented by Yaakov. Whatever happened to him has been happening to us throughout history, time and time and time again. So that it's very important, Masa Avos, Siman Lachonim, that which happened to our fathers, this is an indication of what's going to happen to the children. Yaakov is the prime example, the classic example of the Jew throughout all of history. You know what, maybe even before we look at the text, let's look at the second side. I've taken selections from the Ramban, and as I always tell you, don't be intimidated by all that small Hebrew writing. Don't be intimidated. I divided it into sections. Number one is the Ramban's introduction to the Sefer. Not every Sefer does the Ramban write an introduction, but here he does. Nechteva ha-parsha hazot. Number one. Nechteva ha-parsha hazot, this parsha was written, lahodiyah, to let us know, ki hitzil ha-kodesh baruch hu et avdo, that God saved his servant, uvgo'alo, and he redeemed him, miyad chozak mimenu, from the hand of one who was stronger than him. Vayishlach malach vayatzileu, God sent an angel who saved Yaakov. Ulamdenu od. Each one of these things that we are learning are extremely significant. Lelamdenu od, this parasha was written in order to teach us shehu lo botach b'tzidkaso, that Yaakov did not place his trust or his faith in his own righteousness, or for that matter, in the fact that God had promised him at the beginning of Parshas Vayetze, as he has that dream and he sees the ladder and angels of heaven going up and down. God says, I will be with you, Ushmarticha, and I'm going to take care of you, Bechol Asher Telech, wherever you go, Vahashivoticha Elo Adom Azos, and I'm going to bring you back to this land. Yaakov does not place his trust in that promise. He understood that it is his responsibility to do whatever he can to save himself. There's a responsibility upon the Jew to do whatever is in his power. He cannot simply sit back and say, listen, God, you promised. Keep your promise and he's going to do nothing. It cannot be. And this is a theme of the Ramban throughout Chumash. A thing that he begins in Parshat Noach. Why did Noach have to build an ark? To get all of animal kind into that ark. You know, you think it's a big ark. Not a big ark. It was a small ark. It was probably yacht in the marina over there in Herzliya is bigger than the table, than Noah's Ark. So what was the point of making it? Lema'id b'nes, to minimize the miracle. At least we think that everybody got into the Tefa. Because ein somchen anes, these are the words that the Ramban uses often. Ein somchen anes, if you're not permitted to depend on the fact that God is going to do a miracle. Man has a responsibility to do whatever he can. And that's how he explains the parsha of the spies. Why did he send, why did Moshe Rabbeinu send spies? What are you talking about? God promised us the land. L'chol azarach, to you and to your children, I've given the land. He promised it to Avraham, to Yitzchak, to Yaakov, to Moshe, Aaron. Yeah, he promised it. He promised it. God's promise is cash in the bank. But no, the Ramban says that ein somchen anes, you can't depend on the miracle. You have to do whatever you can. And any warring army would send spies to get as much information as they can about the enemy before you attack. You have to know who you're attacking. You have to know where to attack. You have to know how to march, where to march. So, that means the first thing we have to learn from this parasha is that God saved his servant. He sent an angel to help, to rescue him. And to teach us also, that he didn't place his trust in his righteousness, and Yaakov tried to save himself with whatever means were available to him. And from this parasha there is another hint, an indication, a sign for all generations. Whatever happened to our father Yaakov with his brother Esav, this is always the same thing, is going to repeat itself all over constantly with the children of Esav. What else we learn from here is that we have to follow the example of Yaakov. We have to follow and hold on to the way of the tzaddik. Shenazmin atzmenu l'shlosha hadvarim. Shehizmin hu et atzmo. We have to prepare ourselves for the three things that he prepared himself for. And they are letfilo, ledodon, ulahatzolo v'derech milchama. He prepared himself through prayer by sending a gift. Ulahatzolo v'derech milchama. And to save himself either by war, or there's another way to save yourself. Livrorach alihinatzel. There are times when it's not war that you're supposed to wage, but there are times that you have to flee and sort of be around to fight the battle on another day. Now, you should have noticed something here. Maybe you didn't. No, I shouldn't be too harsh with you. Later on, what? Ah, very good. You did notice. You did notice. You're, okay, you're good. What? All right. Okay, you're all right. Rashi is going to say, and the Ramban is going to quote that Rashi later, that Yaakov prepared himself for three things: ledoron, letvila, ulamilchama. Doron is the gift, tvila is the prayer, and then he prepares himself for war. Those are the famous three words of Rashi that come from Chazal: ledoron, letvila, ulamilchama. And if you'll take a look in number three of the Ramban, where it says, it's underlined for Rashi Katav, Rashi wrote, the other camp, after he had divided his family in two camps, the other camp will be rescued, al korcho, ki elokim imo, because God will be with him, hitkin atzmo, take a look, now he quotes the Rashi that you're all familiar with, he prepared himself with shlosha devonim, litfilo, Uladonon Ulamulchama. Wait a minute. No, still not what Rashi said. Still not what Rashi said. Unless, of course, he has a different gesa, but it's very significant. Very, very significant. All right, good. I blew up my ear. You have to have a chumash with Rashi. You have to have a shul. Hitkin, I'm reading the Rashi. Hitkin atzmo l'shlosha devarim. Yaakov prepared himself for three things. L'toron, l'tfilah, u'l'milchama. That's what we all know since we were little children. L'toron, l'tfilah, u'l'milchama. To send a gift. Send a gift to soften the heart of Esau. He prays to God. U'l'milchama. He prepares himself to do whatever it is that he must do. All right. But the Ramban has a different order. By the way, now we can take a look at the psukim themselves. How indeed did he prepare himself? Let's see what the Torah says. Vayishlach Yaakov. Come on, let's go. No. Vayishlach Yaakov alochim lefonav el Esav achiv. Yeah, Yaakov sent messengers before him to his brother Esav. Arzor seyer to the land of seyer. Stay evil in fear of edam ayitzav l'tam leimor. And he commanded them saying, Ko tomnu ladolin Esav, so shall you say to my master Esav, Ko amar avdecha Yaakov, so says your servant Yaakov. In love on guarantee I lived with love on ve'echer adota, and I have tarried until now. He doesn't want Esav to think that Yaakov has been hiding out in the outer edges of Mesopotamia because he's afraid of him. No. I would have come home earlier, but I was delayed. Ve'echer adota, va'yili shor v'chamor tzom ve'eved v'shivcha, ve'eshluchol ha'gid lo'doni, and I have oxen and donkeys and sheep and servants, maidservants, men servants. And I'm sending this to tell my master Linzochen being able to find favor in your eyes. By Yaakov Lemar, the messengers returned to Yaakov saying, Bon Olachicha Esav, we came to your brother Esav. The Kamholech Likratcha Yishenau, he's coming toward you with 400 men. He's coming toward you with 400 men. The Ramban is going to say that. It's possible that Esav didn't even want to speak with the Malachim. He didn't permit them to come into his presence. In other words, he was showing his extreme displeasure, and this already was an indication to the Malachim that Esav is not coming with friendly or peaceful intentions. Yaakov was very frightened by Yetzelo, and he felt oppressed. Now he begins to act. What's the first thing that he does? Vayachatz et ha'om asher ito, he divided the camp that was with him. The first thing he does is he's preparing himself for what? For war. The first thing he's preparing himself is for war. That's right, and that didn't appear neither in the Ramban nor in Rashi. The Ramban says Tfila first, Doron second, and Milchama third. Rashi says Doron, gift first, Tfila and Milchama. But what does it say over here? The first thing he prepared himself is for war. Vayomer, he said, if Esav is going to come against one camp and strike that camp, the other camp will survive. Vayomer Yaakov, the second Vayomer. Vayomer one is his preparation for war. Vayomer two, he prays. So it's the order in the pasuk is Milchama war first, he puts his camp on a war footing, and then he prays. Vayomer Yaakov. Yaakov said, Olekei Avi Avram, the God of my father Avram, Olekei Avi Yitzhak, and the God of my father Yitzhak, Hashem Ha'omer Elai, God who said to me, you told me just a little while ago, out there in Mesopotamia, Shuv La'artzecha L'mauladecha, go back to your land and your birthplace, Ve'etiva Imach, I will do good with you. I have been diminished. I'm small. For all of your kindness, and we call her Amet, and we call all the truth, Asher Osita, Imarabdacha, that you did with the servant, Ki b'makli avarti atayar ben azeh. I'm so thankful to you for everything you've done. I crossed the Jordan with my staff in hand. V'ato ayisi l'shnei machanot anayim, two camps. Hatzileni no miyad achi miyad Esav. Please save me from the hands of my brother, the hands of Esav. Many years ago, we said the famous Beis Halevi, the first Rabbi Yosef Dov Halevi Saloveitchik. The Heilige Beis Halevi, who asks the great question, why couldn't he have said, Hatzileni no miyad achi, save me from the hands of my brother? He only has one brother. Why couldn't he have said, Hatzileni no miyad Esav, save me from the hands of Esav? Why does Yaakov in his tefillah have to say, Hatzileni no miyad achi, save me from the hands of my brother, miyad Esav, from the hands of Esav? Like maybe God doesn't know who his brother is, because he has a few of them. So he says, I will, Esav. So the famous Beis Halevi says, because Yaakov understands that throughout all of history, there are going to be two assaults, two ways by which the nations of the world are going to attack the Jewish people. And the Rambam, Maimonides, talks about it in one of his letters. I think it was in the letter to the Jews of Yemen, who were under terrible assault from Muslims. You know, very, very peaceful, non-radical Muslims of a thousand years ago made life extremely difficult for the Jews of Yemen, for that matter, for the life of the Rambam himself, who fled from them. He had to flee from Spain, he had to flee from Morocco, Freglish. So he says to them, you should know throughout all of history there are going to be two assaults on the Jewish people. One is going to be an attack on the soul of the Jewish people, and the other is going to be on an attack on the lives of the Jewish people. There are going to be the Hamans and the Hitlers, Yimach Shemam, who will want to utterly destroy and eradicate the Jewish people physically. And then there are going to be those like Greece and other cultures who attack not the lives of the Jewish people. They don't mind having live Jews, but they love live Jews who are not Jewish, who have lost the sense of what it means to be a Shomer Torah Mitzvah. So these are the two assaults throughout all of history. So therefore Yaakov Avinu prays, and you know what's fascinating? The one he prays for first. Hatzileni no, please save me miyad achi, from the hand of my brother. If he comes to embrace me as a brother, with absolutely equal rights, you can move in every area of society, because that is the far greater danger to the Jewish people. Jews have survived through adversity. Oy, but a prosperity can be totally destructive of the Jewish neshama. Lo yaleinu, we have lost more Jews in the golden Medina, America, than we lost in so many other forms of exile. Lost, losing every minute of every day. Millions upon millions have lost the Kodesh Israel in the golden and gewaldige Medina, America. That's Ochi. And Yaakov understands that that embrace, that kiss of an Esav, of a Christian world, can be a kiss of death. Save me from that. And then he prays, Hatzileni no, save me miyad Esav, from the hand of Esav, if Esav comes against me in order to destroy me. Then you know your enemy. Then you know your enemy. But when you are living in prosperity and you can move in all walks of life and in every part of society, ve'veismach. If a black man can become president, the next president may be a Jewish woman. Anything can happen. And Yaakov is concerned, Hatzileinu, please save me from the hands of my brother, from the hands of Esav. So what's the second thing that means? He is praying. First, he has set his camp on a war footing, and now he prays, Ki yorei anochi also, I fear him, Yaakov says, Penyovo vihikani, lest he will come and strike me, mother and children.
By the way,
Yaakov has absolutely no illusions. Women and children are not going to be spared by the Esavs of all history. Women and children will not be spared. They will kill all. They will kill all. Men, women, and children, if they can just get their hands on them. And they've been doing it throughout all history. He has no illusions. And you said, God, you're going to make my children as many as the sand by the seashore. That cannot be counted because it's so many. That night, he remained there that night. Here comes the third part of his plan. He took from that which was in his hand, which he had in hand, a gift to his brother Esav. So as we learn the Parsha, we see that the order was not, as the Ramban said, Tfilo, Doron, and Milchama. It's not how he quotes Rashi. And then he also quotes Rashi as Tfilon Doron Milchama, but I have the Rashi here where it says L'Doron L'Tfilon Ulu Milchama. Now, if Rashi says L'Doron Tfilon Ulu Milchama, but that's not what he did. Why does Rashi say that? What he did was, he did first Milchama, first he prepared for war, then he prayed, and then he sent the gift. So obviously, what's happening over here is the following. There's a difference in the way in which he prepared himself and the way in which it played itself out. How was this all to indeed happen? The first thing that was going to happen is he's going to attempt to appease. I use that word, though the word appease is a word that's very bad. It has such terrible connotations. I'm going to explain that. I will explain that in a moment. He wants, in other words, let's say instead of appease, he wants to make peace. He sends the gift to Esav in order to soften his heart, and I'm not talking about letting another 250 Palestinian Rotschen free. No, we're not talking about it. He's sending a gift, and by the way, Shepsalach he sends. He sends Shepsalach and goats and cows and camels, not Barkutis. That's what he sends. And the purpose is, he wants to create maybe a slight change of the relationship that he assumes he knows exists. He knows that Esav despises him. And he understands that Esav has very good reason to despise him. He sees himself as the wronged party, the one whose birthright was taken, whose blessings were taken. So he wants to soften him up. All right? And what will be ultimately the final, what's the last step? The last step, when there is no other choice, it's going to be milchama. If the Doron doesn't help, and I'm not going to say what you would have thought I was going to say, if the Tfilah doesn't help, there's no such thing, because the Tfilah is going to help either way. The tefillah is there, and the prayer is there in the middle, because if he accepts the Doron, if he accepts the gift, it's because of the prayer. If Yaakov is victorious in battle, it's because of the tefillah, the prayer. The prayer that's in the middle is the one that, in a sense, sheds its light on both of the others. But there's more over here. Ramesh. He prepares himself in what way? Milchama. Why does he put his family on a war footing? What's the rush? Why doesn't he send the gift and then see, you know, it may not be necessary to go on to Konenut Gevoha. Not yet. Wait a minute. Let him send the gift first. And in the event that the gift doesn't succeed, then, okay, fellas, prepare yourselves for war. That is a very, very important thing that Yaakov Avinu is teaching Jews for all time. The only time that the gift will be meaningful is if the enemy knows you're prepared for war. If you're not prepared for war, the enemy is going to see the gift as a pitiful plea for mercy, or payola, graft. Please stay away from me, I'll pay my way. It will not be seen as a hand extended for peace. Do you know when the gift becomes significant and meaningful? Is when Esau sees that somebody who's ready and prepared for war. There are two camps ready to confront me. This man is not frightened nor terrified. Then he can understand that the gift is not some kind of a shalchada graft, but this is a hand extended for peace.
I don't see where the first beginning seems to be war. It seems to be surrender. All he's saying is he's dividing the camp, the family into two camps. Or he said, Esau comes to one camp and strikes it down, then the remaining camp shall survive. That doesn't sound like war.
You know what?
Like surrender.
You know what?
No. That's not.
I like your question. How do you like that? I'm very excited. You know why I like your question? Because now I understand the Rashi. Rashi on that pasuk says, he divided the camp in two, and he says, if he comes against one camp, the other will survive. Yes, so you're saying it sounds like surrender. I lose one camp, so I'll go running. So Rashi says, how does he know that the other camp will survive? So Rashi says, "V'hoya ha'machana ha'nisha l'fleita, the other camp will survive, al karcho, even against his will, ki elochem imo, I'm going to wage war with him." How does Yaakov know that the other camp will survive? Because if he attacks one, the other one is going to attack him. Rashi says, because of your question, Rashi is saying we have to understand the pasuk that Yaakov Avinu was saying, we will survive because we're going to fight. And what does Rashi say right after that? Hitkin atzmo l'shlosh ha'dvarim. This is how Rashi knows that it's shlosh ha'dvarim. That's how he knows that it's war. How does he know war? Yom b'achane nishol afleta. Maybe Esav is simply going to destroy both of the camps. He destroys one, or better, divide and conquer. He destroys one, and then he destroys another. But Yaakov says, no. Hamachana Nisha is going to be leflaita because I'm going to fight with him, and I'm going to win. Yes?
If I may refer to one of your previous lectures.
I never said it.
You said that the reason Yaakov got ready for war was because he was already in Eretz Yisrael. And he had the backbone
20 years ago.
Israel, and that's why he was confident.
She wants to haunt me with something I said 20 years ago. That remains absolutely true today as it was when I said it 20 years ago. And it's not a question on me. It's the reason why here he's ready to wage war when there wasn't even a thought of war at the end of last week's Seder when he is pursued and caught by Laban. I had asked this great question. We stopped learning Parshat Vayishlach and we forget the end of Parshat Vayetzeh. What happened at the end of Parshat Vayetzeh? Boy, you've taken me back in many years. At the end of Parshat Vayetzeh, he has fled from the house of his of his father-in-law in the dark of night. He's scared stiff of his father-in-law. His father-in-law rides hard across the mountains of Gilead, and he catches up with him. And what is Yaakov able to do? All that Yaakov is able to do is to plead with him. Ma pishiyu machatasi, what did I do? Keep the lockdown right. You pursued me. You touched everything in my house. What did I take of yours? By night, I froze. During the day, I burned. You know, we went through it last week. But he never said over there that he's ready to confront Laban militarily. When is Yaakov ready to confront somebody with war? Only now, when he is being faced by Esau. As I said, the difference was that the Yaakov Laban confrontation took place in Chutz Laaretz. We never won a war in history in Chutz Laaretz. Most probably the most heroic battle that we fought in Chutz Laaretz in all 2,000 years of the exile was the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising, which from the very beginning we knew that the victory was going to be in the total and absolute defeat of all who were in the ghetto. But it was the most heroic chapter in Jewish history in 2,000 years of exile. But we never won a war. And in Eretz Yisrael, well, do we have to get back to the fact that this is Kislev, that it's the month of Hanukkah, where we wage war against the superpower in Eretz Yisrael? By the way, I also said then that that's the difference between Hanukkah and Purim. Purim, Esther pleaded, what's going to happen? I need the army. We've been sold to be destroyed utterly. And all that Ahasuerus ever gave permission for is that Jews have the right to defend themselves. You understand? That's when you give Jews the right to defend themselves, that's an accomplishment. Anyway, let's get back. He prepares himself for war first because he understands that when he will ultimately send a gift, it has to be a gift who's going from one who is strong and ready for war. Only then will the gift have any kind of meaning or significance. Then again, why doesn't he pray first? If he really be from, you understand, first something I can people tell him. And after you've done that, then you prepare for war. So of course Yaakov Avinu is teaching us, if he would have prayed first, do you know what impression would have been left? The impression would have been left, all right, listen, you know, I pray. Now, if prayer doesn't help, I better fall back on preparing myself for war. God forbid. God forbid. What he's doing is he's preparing himself for war, and then he's praying. And by that, he's making the statement that with all of my great preparations for war, I know one thing for certain. The outcome of the battle depends on the decision made by God above. So that the tefillah is a tefillah, and the preparation for war is a preparation for war. And then, with that taken care of, now he's going to deal with Esau. Esau is going to get he's going to get the picture, there's no question about it. Esau is going to be softened up, and the battle is going to be delayed for other moments in history. Let's go back to the Ramban. Back to the Ramban. the Ramban said the things that we have to learn from this parasha, and Kvaro Rabbeinu. All these things that we are to learn from Yaakov, our rabbis have already pointed it out. Now it says, number two, El Esav, he comes to his brother, El Esav Achiv Arzo Seir. Now Seir, the Ramban says, is for the south of Eretz Yisrael. He's going to have to pass nearby Seir, where Esav lives, in order to go into Eretz Yisrael. Bavur Hayot Negev Eretz Yisrael Yedei Edom. The south of Eretz Yisrael is next to Esav. V'Aviv Yoshev Beretz HaNegev. He's on his way to his father's house, and his father is in the south. Yesh lo lava derech Edom, he has to either pass through the land of Edom, or korov shom, or close. Al kein pachad, since he's going to be somewhere in the vicinity, he was afraid, ulai ishma Esav, maybe Esav is going to hear, you know, nothing is done in secret. Maybe Esav will hear that he's someplace in the area and has not made contact with him. Esav will think that he's frightened. V'higdim l'shloach elo malachim la'arzo, so he went ahead and he took the initiative of sending messengers to his land. U'kvar tafsu chachomim al zeh. The rabbis, how do you say tafsu? They what? They jumped on him?
What jumped it? On this.
They were upset with Yaakov that he did this. They were upset with Yaakov. Amru b'breishit chava, the Mevi says, it's a pasuk in Mishlei, and you're going to tell me the English equivalent. The pasuk in Mishlei says, machazik bozne kelev, somebody who holds on, gives a knip to the ear of a dog, mit aber al riv lo lo. A person who enters into an argument that's not his. Like, mind your own business. The person who doesn't mind his own business is like somebody that gets a knip to a dog's ear. What do you think the dog is going to do? The dog has got to fight. You know, let sleeping dogs lie. That's what Shlomo HaMelech is saying. Let sleeping dogs... Lozov! Why did you have to send Malachim to him? Why did you have to communicate with him altogether? Obviously that... Omar HaKadosh Baruch Hu... Ramban brings the Medrash. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to him, L'darko hayom HaHalech. Esav is going, is traveling on the road. Vayita mishaleach etzlo, and you send messages to him. Vomar lo, and even tell him, Ko Omar av the Yaakov, so says your servant Yaakov. What did you need it all for? Here comes the one of the most difficult things that the Ramban says in this parasha. Valdati, you know what we learn from this? According, in my opinion, Gamzer Gir Moses, this is also an indication, a hint of things to come. Ki anachnu hitchalnu nefilateinu biyad Edom. We are guilty of having precipitated our fall into the hands of Edom, Esav. Ki malchei bayit shein, because the kings toward the end of the second temple period, bo bibrit im haronim, they made a treaty. They made a treaty with the Romans. As it says in the Sefer HaChashmonaim, back to Hanukkah again. Umehen shabo beroma, Jews went to Rome. Kach kotev Rabbeinu v'vayikra, the Ramban writes this in Sefer Vayikra as well. V'hi hayta sivat nefilatam v'yadam, we invited the enemy into Eretz Yisrael. We made a treaty with Rome. And Rome came here and we went there. We pushed and invited Arafat and 40,000 Rotskin into Eretz Yisrael. What do you expect is going to happen? You expect that there's going to be peace? We started our fall. Anachnu hitchalnu nefilateinu, the Ramban says. It's a Ramban that pushed it. It simply reverberates across the centuries. We started our fall into the hands of Edom. Because the kings of Beit Sheni, we're talking about the last two brothers of the house of the Hashmonaim, their fall and their disappearance was a profound tragedy. The tragedy was two brothers, Hyrcanus and Aristobulus, nearly the last remaining members of the house of Hashmonaim, broke out into civil war with one another. And one of them called in Rome to assist him. It's unbelievable. Ramesh invited Roman legions into Eretz Yisrael. And there was no other choice. That whatever happened afterwards was simply a result of those terrible, tragic mistakes. Terrible, tragic mistakes. Anachnu hitchalnu nefilat. Every time I read this Ramban, like it shakes me up. shakes me up. We did it. It was our, we had nobody to blame except ourselves. And then, of course, ultimately, Rome continued to come in. How much we suffered from Rome. How much we suffered. They destroyed the Beit HaMikdash. They exiled Jews. They what they did in the days of Rabbi Akiva. Gzeiras Hashmada was terrible. Tell you, there's another line over here. There's another line over here that I have to read, even if I don't finish it all. But there's another line in number five. We'll get back in a moment. Number five. I just don't want to miss this. In number five, the Ramban is talking about the struggle, the nocturnal struggle that takes place between Yaakov and the angel. Pasuk says Yaakov remained alone. His whole family was on the other side. He had returned to the east bank of the Yabok River, and he's alone. And a man, a mysterious man, engages him in struggle. And they struggle for hours, for hours. So this is something we once said. Rashi says that he left pachin ketan. He left some little jars or jugs on the other side, and he went back to get those jars. And this man is struggling with him. Struggling with him. And it keeps going for hours. For hours. The Gemara in Chulin says that somewhere in the middle of the night, the thought struck him, or as I once said, it suddenly dawned on him that this was a completely different kind of struggle. And the Ramban has him, the Gemara says that he turned to this mysterious man. Well, what's bothering him about the mysterious man? What happens if you want to steal a few empty jars? And you fight for half an hour, you can't do it. Yeah. You fight for an hour, you can't. So you know what? You go someplace else and find somebody else's jars. These fashion jars he has to fight about. And it begins to dawn on Yaakov, why does he maintain this struggle? What does he want? And then he says, V'chiganavata o kopiustos ata. Are you a thief or are you a murderer? All of a sudden it begins to dawn on Yaakov, it's not my little jars that he wants, it's my life. It's not another piece of land that he wants. That's not going to satisfy him. He wants my life. It's not a struggle over economics or a piece of land or this much territory or that much territory. It dawns on him that this man wants to kill me. And then, of course, the most fascinating thing. I remember when that dawned on me and it struck me. The man who is attacking Yaakov, when he sees that he's incapable of vanquishing Yaakov, the man, mysterious man, the assailant, the attacker, turns to Yaakov and he says, Shalcheni, send me away, ki ola hashachar, because it's dawn now. I can imagine Yaakov taking a look at him and what do you mean? Shalcheni sent me away? Who started this battle? Who started up? Who attacked who? You know what this Malach is able to do? Turn everything all around. Turn the victim, Yaakov, into the place of terrorist. That's what the world has been doing. We're the ones who've been attacked time and time again, and we're the guilty ones. We're the guilty ones. We did this, we did that, we did the next thing. And here Yaakov is listening to it, and here's the man saying, Shalcheni, send me away. What do you send me away? I got to stop you. You attacked me. But you know what? That's lost in history. Lost in history. There's so much to learn from that confrontation. That nocturnal struggle with the Malach who Chazal say was sorrow fill Esav, the son of Esav. Now take a look what the Ramban says. Vayarki lo yacholo, number 5, he saw, the Malach saw, the Ish, the mysterious Ish saw that he was incapable of winning over Yaakov. Malachov gibore korach ose devoro, valken lo yacholo hamalach lahaziko. Yaakov is the gibore korach, the mighty ones, and therefore the Malach was not able to harm him. Because this Sarov Shalaisov, he's also an angel. And this angel has limitations. He can only do what he was permitted to do. And you know what he was permitted to do? He was only permitted to strike his thigh so that Yaakov is going to emerge from the confrontation limping. For Amru Bebreshis Chabam. Bereshis Chaba, the Medrash says that by that blow that the Malach hit Yaakov, Nogab the Chol HaTzadikim Shatidin Lihiyot Mimenu, he struck at all of the righteous who are going to come out of Yaakov. Zedoro Shel Shmadim, listen to the Medrash. Zedoro Shel Shmad, that's the generation of Shmad. There were periods in history where goyim mamesh ma, well, we know terrible periods in history. Voha inyan ki hamaora hazeh, this hamaora kula, this event ramaz l'dayrosov, it was a remez for the further generations. Here dor bizarum shel Yaakov, there will be a generation that the seed of Yaakov yidgaber Esav aleim, Esav will wax stronger than them. Until it will reach a point as though Esau is going to succeed in destroying Yaakov utterly. This was one generation in the days of the wise men in the Mishnah, like the generation of Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava the Chavedov, as the Gemara says. The only reason why the Ramban is bringing this message is because the Ramban lived 600 years before the Shoah. If he would be writing the Ramban after the Shoah, he would not have to bring a Medrash to tell us about how horrible the things that Esav does to Yaakov. But he brings this Medrash, and I'll tell you, you'll see right away why this Medrash struck me. Omar Rabchiyah Barabbah said, "In Yom Ali Adam, ten nashecha al kedusha shmo shel Hakadosh Baruch Hu." If somebody's going to tell me, give my life for Kiddush Hashem, ani notein, I'm going to do it. I'll give my life. Ubilvad sheyeharkuni miyad. One condition. He should kill me immediately. Avol bedoro shel shmad eini yochol lizbo. But in the generation of shmad, then I will not be able to take the pain. Uma hayu osim bedoro shel shmad. What did they do in those terrible generations? They would bring balls of metal that they heated in fire and put it under the armpits. What he's talking about is torture. When I read all those stories about the possibility that the Beit Chabad a week and a half ago, people were tortured until they were no longer able to, they couldn't be recognized them. Torture. Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba said, I'll give my life up Kiddush Hashem, but kill me immediately. If what we know is true, then Rifki is the one who suffered the least. The others were Doroshel Shmad. That's Doroshel Shmad. Any Yochel Isbo, that I can't take. Balls of metal, melabin in otan, and they would make them burning hot in fire. V'notnin otan tachat shech yehen, umasin nafshotein mehen, and that draw their life out of them. The horror of torture. There's Dorot Achayim, the Ramban says, there were other generations, Sha'asu Umanu Kizeh, that they did similar things, V'yoter v'amizeh, and even worse, v'akol sovalnu, we suffered it all. V'ovar aleinu, commotion, and you know, we survived it all. The end of this first part of Parshat Vayishlach says, V'yavo Yaakov Sholem Ir Shechem. He finally arrived into the heartland where it's Israel, Ir Shechem, Sholem. Sholem begufo, Sholem bememono, that he had gone through, in a sense, he had, in a spiritual sense, suffered the suffering of Jews throughout all of history. One more Ramban. Number four. Esau says, you know, come with me. Let's travel together. My men will take care of you. You know, everything is there's all peace and kindness out there. So Yaakov says, why should I find such favor in the eyes of my master? What do you have to do something, a taiva for me that I don't need? Let me just find favor in your eyes. You don't have to pay me anything. It's okay. I gave you all of this. I'm happy with it. Lashon Rashi. That's what Rashi said. By Kavonah, Yaakov. Yaakov's intent was, he wanted to get as far away as he can from Esau. He didn't want them. He didn't want to be in their company. He didn't want to mix in their society. Remember, what did we say? Hatzleini no miyad achi. Save me from the hand of my brother if he comes with friendship, because it's more destructive than anything else. He didn't want to have anything to do with it. Certainly now Yaakov has, his intention is to travel in a completely different direction. Esau is going to go to Seir, and he's going to go into the heartland of Eretz Yisrael. Another advice for all of history. Amru, they said, Rabbi Yamai can have a salich lemalchuta. When Rabbi Yamai had to go plead the case of the Jewish people before Caesar, before the king, having the stakel ba'ador parashas, you know what Gedol Yisrael did before they had to represent the Jewish people? They'd study parashas Vayishlach. Vayishlach is parashas Hagolos. They'd read this in order to find some indication over here. What approach should they take? One thing they never did, they never traveled with a Roman. Traveled alone rather than travel with a Roman. What did Jacob say? I'll go off on my own. It's all right. We're okay. Everything's fine. We're friends. We're brothers. But, you know, I'm going my own way, and you go your way. Chatzman, one time, Rabbi Yanai, the Medrash says, lo yistakel ba, one time he had to go plead on behalf of the Jewish people in Rome, and he didn't learn over Parshas Vayishlach. Venosivi mei Roma in, and he ended up traveling with a Roman. Ba beroma, bechatzar malchi Edom, al iski atzibur. Velo higil la'ako. No, I skipped along. He's traveling with this Roman. He's not even out of Eretz Yisrael yet. He arrives at Akko, you understand? They still have to travel across the Mediterranean. And you know what? He was left without the coat on his back. He was left with nothing. Velo higil Akko ad shemocha penis shelo. Penis is a coat. Mipnei shehoi. So Kabbalah b'yodam, Chazal had received this message. Shazu Parshas Golos. Parshas Vayishlach is the parsha of Golos. Kishayabob Roma v'chatzam alchi Edom alay iski hatzibur, when he'd come to Rome, because he had to do something for the community. Or mistakel the parshasu loleches acharei atzas hazokim hachacham. He would see what was the counsel and the advice of that elder Yaakov Avinu, the wise man. Ki mimenu yiru adorot v'chein yasu. From him the generations have to see, and so they shall do. And for every generation, there's something to learn from Yaakov. Of course, I think I made the case for some of the things that we have to learn. You have to ask yourself the first question, and you have to give an honest answer. Do they want land, or do they want our lives? And it's only after you have answered that question can you go further. And second, you have to ask yourself, who started it up? And it's not like two children in kindergarten, he started, she started. They started up, and then they say, they turn it all around. Shalcheini, let me go. Mamish, when Yaakov heard that Malach say, send me away. Ki Allah Shachri, what happened? What happened? I didn't start with you. Is that what they would say in Yiddish? Go wherever you want! Alright, so this is the Parshas Hagolos. There's a lot more to learn from it. Okay, yes?
How about the Christian evangelists today? Should we walk with them?
Renny, you have a unique ability to ask a question that requires another 10 shiur and the place can explode. And you just ask it, should we go to the evangelist? I'm not going to talk about it now. It's a very shveris, very difficult question. Okay, that's enough.
I'm going to remind you also, I called the shiur 20 years ago now. And I should get it done.
Yes, I'm from one and I'm from two.